Morning Meeting, brought to you by Verizon. Stay connected to your Patriots at home and on the go with Fios Quantum Internet and NFL Mobile from Verizon. That's powerful.
Well, guys, I think what I learned Monday night was a 16-9 home win against the Raiders is pretty much the same as a 41-14 road loss to the Chiefs.
I think what I learned is we used to consider early season games preseason extensions because they were so easy. Now they look like preseason extensions because they look like preseason games. We're just rotating offensive linemen. We can't figure out who's playing. Jimmy Garoppolo gets to play. It's preseason extended.
To Andy's point is when we started this 4 weeks ago, we talked a lot about expecting this team to be very good, but a little bit surprised there were so many positions that were still unsettled. To Andy's point, we're seeing a lot of unsettled positions, especially up front in the offensive line, but that's not the only spot. A little surprising for me for a Belichick coach team at this point.
Yeah, it is surprising. I could understand if injuries were a factor and we're trying to figure out, you know, because some injuries happen at the end of training camp.
Nope.
That's not the case.
Nope.
This is, we talked about this, you know, the first week of the show. This is as healthy as the team has been going into the season with the main characters.
And they've stayed healthy. We've seen a lot of major injuries across the league.
Right.
The Patriots have been very, very healthy. And all the inactives, for the most part, are healthy scratches.
I think six of the seven Monday night were healthy scratches.
And yet they're still struggling to find who's who. Do we have any kind of reason why at this point? Any theory that you want to throw out there?
They're not that good. They're not all that talented. You know, I look at it and
I refuse to believe that.
Well, why?
Because I've seen
them
play.
Don't ask questions that you don't want the answers to.
I've seen them play better. I've seen these players play much, much better than what
some of them.
Some of them.
Nate Solder, you've seen play much better. That is a strange situation why your Pro Bowl caliber, what we thought would be a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle, has really regressed and to the point where he's just flat out struggling. He's not very good out there. Now, some people like you, I think, you took away Logan Mankins. There's a sort of a domino effect. Maybe that's adversely affecting him. But there's a lot of guys out there, we don't know if they're better. We don't know what Gronk is post-surgery. We certainly don't know what Amendola or LaFell or these guys are. We don't know what the young offensive linemen are. We have a lot of questions on defense with certain guys. You know, everything on defense seemed like it was potential. This has the potential to be a really good unit. Well, right now, they're not living up to their potential on either side of the ball.
I have a question about the coaching and the decision-making process, too. You know, Andy touched on this a little bit with the preseason-like nature of the rotation. And I don't really understand what that's suiting. I mean, at this point, I would think that Bill Belichick and his coaches have a good idea of their personnel. They should know there's been enough on tape of even the younger guys, Jordan Devey, Josh Klein, Brian Stork, Cameron Fleming. You should know what you have with these guys. I am not an expert on offensive line play. I'm not an expert in any area of football, okay? But they are. So they should figure out who the five best are, and they should have a set lineup and let them play a little bit. This constant taking in and out, you know, even Vollmer and Solder on Monday night were coming out of the game. Marcus Cannon was playing guard in the first couple of weeks. Now he's backing up at tackle. There's just so much turmoil there. I don't know how it gets better without guys just being... Just get out there and develop some cohesion and play.
I've never seen anything like it on the offensive line. No. I mean, any team, at you know, barring injury, I've never seen anything like this.
And you wonder how... I know we point to Dante Scarnecchia for the coaching ability, but I also just wonder how it would be different if he were the voice talking to Bill about what are we going to do? Okay, we're going to make these changes. We're going to start these rookies. Well, now we're going to rotate these guys. Would Dante have said... Bill, that doesn't make any sense. We're seeking continuity. We've picked five. We got to give them a chance, whatever it may be.
Right.
How that dialogue would have been different between Belichick and Scar as opposed to DeGuglielmo.
Yeah,
nice.
Second time.
Now you have to assume that everything going on in front of him is affecting Tom Brady.
Yes.
How much is it affecting him, and how much of it is Tom Brady?
Well, you never know mentally how much it's weighing on him, but it's certainly understandable to think that he's going back there expecting to have to get rid of the ball quickly. Now, there were times I thought the two interceptions, he actually had time to throw. I thought there were other times where he forced throws to guys that were covered, and, you know, we look back and there were guys elsewhere that were open. Andy's boy Jimmy Devlin was open on a play.
Big game.
When he tried to force one to Gronkowski near the sideline. But you can't just dismiss the amount of pressure that he's been under. That's to me the overriding factor of the offense is the constant pressure that the entire group has been under, and Brady in particular. How do you sit there and go through your progressions like you always do when you've been getting hit like that? You know, he's not used to getting hit this often, this hard, and the strip sacks, the turnovers that are coming now. I don't know what the answer is. He's not playing well. To what end? I mean, they haven't run it well.
Well, have we seen it? Because the last two games against bad run defenses, they've
32
come out,
carries for, you know, 76 yards.
Yeah, but
or
they've come out in the shotgun and thrown three straight passes to open the game towards a punt. You've set a tone already. You've set an adverse tone for your offense, a negative tone for your offense already.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think that to just run the ball and pound it away when you're not doing that very well either can set just as negative a tone.
I mean, they didn't attempt to run the ball this week at all. There was no attempt to run the football this week.
I would agree with you, but last week against Oakland, I would disagree. I think they gave a lot of chances to run the ball. They didn't do it well.
Yeah, they didn't do it well, but I also don't like the tone that's set by simply going shotgun pass to start every game. When your offense stinks through the air, why are we starting with that? Well, like, that makes no sense to me.
There's a lot of questions. We haven't even gotten to the defense that much, but we'll get into that later in the show.
First thing that jumped out to me Monday night was just how badly the defense played, specifically the run defense. It brought back memories, bad memories, of the opener in Miami, and I think a lot of the same factors were at play. And I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I think the Patriots really miss Silva Salinga in the middle of that defense. I think he was one of the only guys that had the kind of size to be matched up next to Vince Wilfork that allowed Wilfork to play on the end in the 3-4 a little bit while Salinga played over the nose. This forced Chandler Jones back on the end in a 3-4, and I thought Kansas City really targeted him, and I would expect to see a lot more of that. Noshon Moreno had a huge day. Nile Davis and Jamal Charles also big nights running the football against the Patriots. I don't think Chandler Jones is big enough. I said it then. I still believe it now. We're a full month into the season. I don't want to see Chandler Jones up front as a defensive end in the 3-4, I just don't think he's big enough. Switching over to the offensive side of the ball, I just didn't really understand the personnel decisions that went into this game. To only dress three wide receivers for an NFL football game, to me, didn't make any sense. I need to see a little bit more from Dobson. I know I've been tooting his horn throughout the summer. I want to see this guy get an opportunity on the outside, get a chance to be active and to make plays during the game. They really haven't thrown him the football when he's been active, and he's been inactive 3 out of 4 weeks. That's too much. Not a whole lot to be happy about Monday night against the Chiefs, but one area that I thought did stand out was special teams, specifically the captain, Matthew Slater. He was outstanding in punt coverage as the gunner, got down the field really quickly a couple of times. Perfect timing on his tackles of Freddie Hammond, really pinned the Chiefs back. Now, ultimately, it didn't matter because the defense didn't play very well, but one guy who showed up was Matthew Slater.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
Well, I think each week, no matter if you're ranked first or last, you got to go out and prove it.
Patriots Football Weekly, brought to you by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. Putnam, new ways of thinking for financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide.
Here's this week's Images of the Week. Monday night was a rough night for anyone wearing a Patriots uniform. Here's Vince Wilfork getting double-teamed. Can you ever remember a team slipping on the field as much as the Patriots did in a non-weather game? Darrell Revis had his issues with Dwayne Bowe, but I would have liked to see him more one-on-one with Bowe. Finally, at least one guy had a decent night, Brandon LaFell.
Player Perspective, brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence through new ways of thinking.
Joining me now in the Patriots locker room at Gillette Stadium, Patriots safety Devin McCourty. And Devin, obviously one of the messages this week is going to be on to Cincinnati. Put what happened in the rearview mirror. But how do you do that as a veteran player?
This week's a little different. You know, usually after the game we'll come in Monday and we'll put the game to rest. But, you know, now going into a short week, we have no choice. And I think the easiest way is diving into Cincinnati. You know, when I got back, took a nap and woke up and watched some film, and that's the quickest way to move on. You start getting on their personnel, on their schemes and different things like that, and you realize it's time to move on if we want to have a chance to even win this game Sunday.
Obviously, the test gets, it's no easier. You look at that Cincinnati team, a lot of people think they might be the best team in football. Coach Belichick even said it this week, maybe one of the more complete teams they've seen. What do you see from that offense? Obviously, we know A.J. Green, but there's a lot more than that.
Versatility, I think. Anytime you talk about a receiver throwing perfect passes down the sideline with Sanu, it just shows the versatility of their offense. They have two very good running backs that come in We saw a lot of Bernard last year, and he looks even better this year with a year under his belt. He's an explosive back. He can run anywhere, really, and I think it all starts with Andy Dalton. When you have a good quarterback back there controlling everything, he's only taken one sack this year, and they have one turnover as an offensive group. So, like you said, it doesn't get easier. I mean, our work's going to be cut out for us this week, and it's going to be important for us to come out and play well defensively.
In terms of being the leader of the back end, chance you get Brandon Browner back this week. He comes off suspension. You've dealt with some injuries. Just in terms of personnel, communication, moving parts, how do you feel like that's all coming together?
It's been pretty good. I mean, I think, you know, OTAs and training camp gave us a good look at that. We had a lot of guys that were healthy, so we were able to do a lot of different things, having, you know, at some points, you know, a whole group that was in training camp hasn't even played together, you know, so far this season. So I think a lot of guys got a chance to play together. So it's the same thing now, you know. If B gets back in there, he'll fit right in like it was in training camp. And I'm excited. You know, I know he's chomping at the bit to get back out and play football. That's what he came here to do. So I'm excited for him getting a chance to go out there and play this week or whenever he's out there and active.
And even though you have your Rutgers shirt on, when Sanu drops back for one of those trick plays, you'll still try to knock it down, right?
Knock it down. I hope he throws me one.
Oh, maybe he'll get confused, think you guys are both on Rutgers, and throw to you.
Maybe.
We're going to keep it simple this week in some of the matchups. And the first thing for the Patriots, get off to a fast start. The Bengals have done just that in their three games. 44-3, they've outscored opponents in the first half. Flip side of that for the Patriots, it's been a struggle. They've been three and out every game through four games, have trailed 7-0 three different times in four games. You're back in front of your home crowd. There's going to be a primetime environment. You need to build off that, get off to an early start. As we know, turnover differential is always key. Patriots were on the wrong end of that last week, -3 against Kansas City, played a big part in the blowout. Bengals have the best turnover ratio in the National Football League, +6 through three games. Only turnover so far this season is one interception by Andy Dalton. Patriots need to win the turnover battle if they're going to win a game against a competitive playoff contender like the Bengals. Finally, we'll look at the defensive side of the football, and it's about coverage. Andy Dalton's been tough to sack, has not gone down once in the first three games, hasn't made a lot of mistakes. So that means Revis Island, this is your game to take over. A.J. Green, we know he's Dalton's favorite target. 12 catches, averaging almost 20 yards a catch. Big play guy. The Bengals don't make a lot of mistakes, and when they try to make plays, it's usually to A.J. Green. Revis Island needs to shut down Green.
Coming up on Patriots Football Weekly.
You made yourself a worse team for no reason by cutting Tommy Kelly in August when you could use him.
Patriots Football Weekly is brought to you in part by Ace Ticket, the official travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. New England Football Night is presented by AT&T, mobilizing your world.
On Monday, the FCC ended its 40-year-old okay for leagues to enforce TV blackout rules when a given team can't sell out its stadium. It was a unanimous vote, and it made sense because it's pretty much unanimous that the need for blackouts has gone the way of the wing T in the NFL. But does this mean an end to blackouts? No. The league can still enforce blackouts. It's just if someone objects, it won't have the protection of the government. Should we as fans care? Not really. Fans don't make the decision to buy tickets because they're afraid the game might get blacked out. However, the threat of a blackout does force teams to work their butts off to sell out the stadium. And until someone legally objects, blackouts will be a tool the league will leverage for that.
I'm going to focus on the 49ers. That team is too talented, first of all, to only be 2-2. And I got a chance to watch them on Sunday against a good Philadelphia team, and I got to see why. Unbelievable sloppiness, a lack of cohesion throughout. They look like they're infighting amongst each other, amongst the coach with Jim Harbaugh, delay of game penalties, blown opportunities. You look at a game when they allowed three touchdowns, one on a block punt, one on a punt return, and one on an interception return, and they still won the football game against the previously undefeated team. That's how good San Francisco is. No excuse for a 2-2 start.
There's not actually a quarterback controversy in New England, but there is one in Buffalo. Doug Marrone has decided Kyle Orton is his guy. EJ Manuel is out. But if you look at it, does this make any sense at all? EJ Manuel, 2-2, not great. His numbers, just if you want to compare, are actually better than Tom Brady's, and he's in the midst of a division race. I understand there's some disappointment. Jim Kelly has been down on EJ Manuel, but you drafted EJ Manuel to be your future, to be your franchise quarterback. Kyle Orton coming in and doing anything, winning games, losing games, is irrelevant. EJ Manuel is the guy you've latched your wagon to. Give him a chance to win or lose. It's the future.
Trash Talk, brought to you by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Baxter dumpster in a bag can take it on.
Not a lot's gone right for the Patriots through the first month, but what's been the worst decision the team has made?
That's a tough one. I think there's a couple of things to choose from, but for me, I'm going to go with the obvious, and I'm going to go with the Logan Mankins trade. It didn't make any sense to me at the start. I think you took an offensive line that I thought struggled a little bit at times last season, and you took away its best player, and surprise of all surprises, the first month, it's been a disaster.
I think it was cutting Tommy Kelly. I still don't understand it. I cannot give a good reason for cutting Tommy Kelly. And he continues to sort of have these quotes about the team was thinking about money more than winning, and he didn't understand why they were going with younger players. At least with Mankins, I can say, well, you save some money, and maybe that's going to be put to good use elsewhere. For less than $1 million or whatever it was for Tommy Kelly, all I'm watching now is Chandler Jones get dominated on the ground. And you need a big body up front, yeah. Obviously, especially since you lost Silver Salinga. I just don't understand why Tommy Kelly is having success in Arizona for a good defense and not here in New England.
Yeah, the Kelly one's good. I have to admit that I really didn't think of that one off the top of my head. But that makes sense, too. To me, when you talk about some of the things with money, yeah, they might have gotten some cap space, but how's that doing with your most valuable commodity in Tom Brady? I think that he's had no time to throw the football. He hasn't been comfortable. He hasn't looked comfortable at all in this offense, I think, throughout the month of September. And I don't think that's going to change. And I'm not going to put that all on Mankins, but I think it's a big part of it.
But I also find it hard to believe that, okay, if we plugged Mankins in there, everything would be fine on offense.
No,
suddenly Solder would be able to block guys off the edge. You know, that was all Logan Mankins being gone that has made him so bad on the speed rushers on the outside. Whereas Kelly, I think immediately you would be significantly better on defense. You know, there's a game that I think they got dominated on Monday night because Jamaal Charles just ran right at Chandler Jones, and that established the tone of that entire game. And I think if you put Jones back where he should be and on the edge, not down inside where he's getting pancakes by Eric Fisher. And again, I just get back to the simple thing. There was nothing gained. You know, nothing at all was gained. You made yourself a worse team for no reason by cutting Tommy Kelly in August when you could use him. And it'd be one thing if he was done. Oh, you know, no one signed him. No. He immediately found a job on one of the better defenses in football and is helping them win football games. Makes no sense. Yeah. You can sell me on Mankins. You'll never sell me that cutting Kelly was a good move.
No, I don't think it was a good move. I think Mankins was more important because I think he has been more important in that locker room. I alluded to the mental aspect, and you sort of, you know, went right to the physical with Nate Solder next to him. I think that's an issue, but I think that it's more mental. And you know what else this team lacks right now is a little fight, a little toughness, and that's Logan Mankins to me. Am I biased? Yeah, I'm biased because he's one of my favorite guys that I ever covered. So I'll put that right out there. My agenda is free for everybody to pick apart. I really liked the guy. I thought he was a stand-up guy, and I didn't think they did right by him in forcing him to out of town like that. And I think it's shown through the first month of the season. They need his fight. They need his toughness.
The bottom line is you ship two physical, tough veterans out of town, and then you wonder why you're getting pushed around on both sides of the ball. Bad decisions, two of them.
Tonight's show is brought to you in part by Fisher Plows. Locked and loaded for New England's wicked winter weather. Patriots Football Weekly, brought to you by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
This week's fantasy tip brought to you by DraftKings. Using a running back in tandem with your team defense position is another way to increase upside. Your running back is likely to get more touches if the defense is playing well and his team has a significant lead. Remember, you can win real cash prizes playing fantasy football at DraftKings.com. Head over there today and use the promo code PFW to receive a free entry into a weekly fantasy football contest.
Okay, it's that time of the show where we answer your questions. But first, the 2014 debut of the Wilson Hart Power Index. I know, I've been waiting all season for this.
You have. You've been asking me every week. It's like Christmas. You finally get it hot off the presses. And guess what? Number one team, your opponent next week, the Cincinnati Bengals, tied with the Chargers atop the Wilson Hart Power Index. And so obviously the next question is,
where are the Patriots?
Right.
Tied for 14th, which is probably where they deserve to be, a middling football team. Now, here's where I throw a little meat to Paul to make fun of the index. They are tied with the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks. So three of last year's four title game teams are tied for 14th right now through 14th.
I don't know about you, Fred, but the first thing I thought of when I watched the Patriots play the Raiders a couple of weeks ago and then the Broncos and Seahawks play was, yeah, those three teams are about the same.
Well, that's what I thought.
This came at the right time because I needed a laugh this week.
You are a laugh.
This first question comes from Kyle, and he says, for some reason, I feel like I'm in the minority of not being a Josh McDaniels fan. What are the chances of bringing back Charlie Weiss?
Obviously, it's a possibility. He's now unemployed, and we've seen the Patriots go down that road before, bringing guys back as consultants or sort of just offensive assistants. I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. The next one is from Eric, and he wants to know, with all the early season struggles, why are Danny Amendola and Dante Hightower wearing number 80 and 54, respectively? Shouldn't they be retired?
So let's look past the early season struggles and go, why are those numbers still in circulation?
Just peel the numbers right off their backs.
Listen, I actually might be in the minority on these kinds of things. I'm not a big fan of number retirements. I think that is to be reserved for only the true elite.
Yeah.
And I'm talking Pro Football Hall of Fame guys.
Ed writes in this next question, and he says there's a lot of discussion about Tom Brady's trust of his receivers. Is this not something he talks about with Josh McDaniels? Would it be better to take off some receivers and put in some extra protection for Brady?
No, and we found that out against Kansas City because they had inactive for Dobson and Tompkins, only had three receivers, and it didn't work. They played their worst game of the year. So they're scrambling right now. Personnel-wise, they're scrambling on the offensive line and at receiver and at running back. And then scheme-wise, how they want to play it, nothing is working. And, you know, you've heard Brady talk about, yeah, he has a lot of discussions with everybody. He's been, when you're in a place for 15 years, obviously you're going to get to talk to the coaches and have some say in personnel and talk about ideas. But he doesn't make those decisions. And the bottom line is they've tried a bunch of different things so far with guys inactive, active, and hasn't worked.
All right, that's this week's questions. Every week, send them to AskPFW at Patriots.com.